When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, and we are here in Las Vegas at the SEMA show. This is going to be part one of our SEMA coverage. Today's episode is brought to you by Dodge. Visit Dodge.com or your local dealer today. And Continental, visit OETechnologyseries.com. So check this out. Enjoy this compilation of interviews from today's leading automotive brands like Recaro, Comp Cams, Roush Performance, Brembo, and Centerforce Clutches. All right, let's get started. Let's kick things off with Recaro. All right, here we are in the Recaro booth. Our first interview of SEMA. We're ready to kick it off early in the morning. We're here with Emil Krajicek from Recaro. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. So happy you guys are here. It's good to get started first thing in the morning.
Yeah, we kind of got lucky. We don't even have credentials yet. We were walking by and we're like, I swear we got to go by Recaro. We know where they are, right sort of in the beginning section. So what is your title at Recaro?
So I'm the director for North America. So I have the responsibility for all the product that we build, produce, and develop here in North America. So both the aftermarket, OEM, and the commercial vehicle seats that we do as well.
Recaro has first of all, been around for a long time, right?
Like, since 1906.
Yeah, so it's been around for a long time. And it just seems like in, the last dozen or so years, Recaro started making a push on having the sort of branded seats in all sorts of performance vehicles, but not necessarily all the high-end stuff anymore. It kind of followed the steps, or maybe you guys were the first ones to do it, of kind of what, like, Brembo had started to do. Like, you know, Brembo is OE on so right. many super high-end cars, but then they're like, hey, maybe we should do Ford Focus ST or RS or Mustang or Camaro. And it seems right. like you guys are been there the whole time as well. How much of the company now is the OE stuff versus the aftermarket stuff? Is the aftermarket still sort of the hobby of the company?
So, actually, I wouldn't call the aftermarket really a hobby. It's definitely that part of the market we want to get back in and reinvigorate. It's the thing that's, really, got us to where we're at today. It's helped us, create those partnerships. We've had, partnerships with, like Ford for, 39 years with the Mustang.
Yeah.
And so, it's something that, we need to, keep building upon that, keep the, get fresh product out there again for the aftermarket and, really get reinvigorated. That's why, we've come back to SEMA. This is our second year back, and we really want to, make a splash into the aftermarket world.
You guys also have a big presence in, I guess, commercial seating. I'm not sure what you guys call it, but buses and airplanes, and there's just a whole other arm to this company that is probably massive that maybe not many people are aware of.
Yeah, so as the brand, of course, there are some other, parts of, the company. The thing that, on the automotive side that we stick with is, all things on the ground. And, so we do have a presence in truck seating in Europe. And then in North America, we actually carry a presence in the commercial vehicle, transit buses. And it's a product that, guys are sitting in these things, 24/7, and, it's about the quality, it's about the comfort that Recaro seat really affords for them.
Yeah. Now, I'm very familiar with you guys in the racing scene as well. You guys have some pretty impressive racing shells out there, and you know, guests on our show and guys that come over in that community, like Ken Block, I believe, uses your stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate that, definitely.
Yeah, he's quite the marketer, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a little bit everywhere, if you will. What's new with you guys in the racing seat technology?
So, you know, on the racing seat technology, you know, it's a product that, you know, again, we're getting back and reinvigorating that product. You know, we spent focus for the last couple years in the tuner seats, but, you know, on the racing shells, you know, staying tried and true, you know, to that heritage, you know, safety first, you know, ensuring that, you know, get the, you know, best quality product out there, the best, you know, fit, you know, for the people are, you know, that are using that product. You know, I'll say, you know, there'll be more to come.
Yeah. How do you guys go through the testing process on the racing shell stuff? Like, how many people do you have to physically injure? Hopefully none, right?
Well, we don't injure any. Yeah. But, we work to all the FIA standards of the industry, you know, as well as, you know, we've taken some of our, you know, racing product and we've made it, you know, turned them into street legal products as well, too. So, you know, mostly for Europe. We've done some limited releases here in North America as well and looking to do, you know, some more in the future as well. But, you know, it's, you know, the product and the safety, you know, we, you know, we're striving for, you know, lightest weight. We're striving for, you know, the, you know, safest seat, striving for, you know, meeting the requirements. So, you know, when a guy goes to his track day, he knows he's got a product that's, you know, there ready to go and he doesn't have to worry about any holdups as he's doing inspections.
In the racing seat world, is everything based off of a composite now? It's a carbon fiber, or is there still plastic shells just for affordability, or is there certain types of racing where you can't use certain materials?
Right. You know, that's a really good question. I mean, a lot of our, you know, we call them the affordable solutions, you know, they're glass fiber composites. And we offer those really at every level. So guys have an entry point that, you know, you got a product that meets the requirements, you can go race day with, and you don't have to spend a complete fortune. And then we've got the, you know, the products that, you know, carbon fiber, you know, where guys are looking, you know, it's called hardcore racing. You know, yeah. They're out there, you know, every weekend and, you know, weight is truly a different maker in what they're doing. And so, you know, you got to have that spread of product, you know, so that you can, you know, address the, you know, different kinds of racers, different kinds of what, you know, what these guys want to do.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the tuner seats. Recaro, for me, has always been, I guess I always saw them as more of the technical seat, more of the science-focused seats. Every time somebody says Recaro, I think of ergonomics and, you know, long-term drivability and how you're going to sit up straight or be most comfortable and less fatigue, and that's... I don't know. For me, that's sort of been sort of the ongoing thing with Recaro.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that's, you know, that's what, you know, we put that kind of, let's call it our DNA, if you will, that we put into our seats. And it's about, you know, supporting the body. So you really, in a Recaro seat, you sit in the seat as opposed to on the seat, right? So, you know, when you sit down in, you know, sit on the cushion, you know, a proper forming butt pocket, if you will, that, you know, allows you to sit, you know, properly in the vehicle. You know, and our dealers, you know, they fit guys into those seats, you know, as such. And then the back of the seat, really, you know, an S-shaped curve that really supports your spine. You know, and when you distribute that throughout your whole body, it just makes for a so much more comfortable ride. And, you know, you're able to go for you know, a longer time, you know, ideally, you know, your last lap is faster than your first lap in a Recaro seat, right?
Okay. How many seats are in your aftermarket tuner lineup?
So, let's see. You know, we actually, you know,
because there's certain options on certain seats as well, but there's just different styles. There's got to be at least a half a dozen or
There's about, you know, 8 or 9 different styles, but, you know, inside of that is, you know, all the different, you know, trim colors, trim patterns. I mean, it starts coming into, you know, hundreds of different kinds of options.
Maybe like a wide seat or normal seat or power versus manual.
Exactly.
There's a couple different options on those.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in the racing shells, wider and narrower because, you're really trying to fit
them.
A guy, right?
Yeah.
So, and even in the tuner seats, you know, not, you know, some tuner seats are, you know, a little wider, a little narrower, just, you know, based on, you know, to help fill that need across. You know, the different vehicles.
What are some of the new seats you have here today? We'll grab some photos of them. We'll throw them all up on our social media, and of course at CarCast Show, we'll post plenty of galleries of photos here. But
so, you know, out there on the corner, we've got our Houndstooth. You know, it's a product that you know we revealed last year, and it generated huge excitement. You know, it's got kind of a period correctness to it, you know, that late 70s, early 80s, you know, which a lot of people are modifying right now.
That's a pattern. That's the cover on the seat. Is that available on several different seats?
So, you know, we've limited it to that seat right now.
And what seat is that it's on?
So that is our... Expert Houndstooth.
Expert Houndstooth. There you go. It's early.
Yes. So yeah, no, it's the Expert Houndstooth, and again, it's the center inserts. You know, it's a leather, you know, wrapped bolsters. You know, it's a really, really pretty seat and a really beautiful seat, and fits. You know, it's going to fit good in a lot of cars. The next seat we got, you know, is the Speed V. So what we're targeting after there is really we've got a solution that, you know, guys can drop right into a Corvette with, you know, with the risers solutions that we have adapted for that vehicle as well.
Okay.
You know, we've had to make some changes, you know, being to kind of skinny up the seat a little bit to make it fit.
An aftermarket seat in a Corvette is not easy.
No.
It's kind of complex, and you're right. The seat sits kind of low, and it's very narrow.
Yep. And you don't have a lot of roof to work with, you know, so especially with a full bucket like this. And we found a solution that guys can, you know, buy a full kit and drop it right in the vehicle.
What's the focus, like C6 Corvettes?
So 5, 6, and 7.
So, 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And then the next seat we've got here is our GT. And, you know, so basically, you know, taking our Sportster line, freshening it up, and, you know, putting the kind of a V pattern into the seat, you know, just, you know, really bringing it into what guys are looking for today. You know, it's a shell seat. So, you know, very, very slim looking and, you know, go a long way in a lot of vehicles.
And you're right, it's got sort of a more modern design to it, just sort of the patterns and stuff on it, which we'll show you guys again in our photo gallery. One of the questions I wanted to ask you before we wrap up is what advice would you give somebody when they're shopping for a seat? Because I know you'll look around on their website and you start to think, hey, I want to occasionally do a track day or something, so I want to get a seat with some side bolsters and stuff. And then you realize... you can't get in and out of it very easily because it's too high up on your leg, you know, and you got to be able to turn to get out of the car.
Yep.
So there's a way to sort of hold yourself into the seat, but still make it pretty functional.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't know. What's sort of the advice for shopping for a seat? What should people look for?
Well, you know, I think it's really not a complicated scenario in reality. I mean, you know, kind of one of the first things, you know, take a look at what catches your eye. But don't stop there. Make sure you sit in it, right? I mean, if you're working with dealers or whatever, you know, if it's in a box, have them pull it out of the box, sit in it, you know. Nobody wants to deal with a return, and at the end of the day, you know, it's you know, putting your butt in that seat is what's going to tell you that this is a seat for you or not.
You're right. Like, you're scrolling through photos online, they all look great, but you don't know. Some are going to have a little bit thinner cushion, and some have a little bit thicker cushion, and some are a little snug on the sides,
a little
and
wider, some are a little wider.
Or maybe we're a little wider, and the seats are a little narrower. You never really know until you kind of get in it.
Yep. So yeah, no, that to me, it's just really that simple of advice, and and of course, it's styling too. But absolutely, make sure you sit in it.
Do you guys do custom covers if people want to order that? If they're building a specific car, how do you guys handle different colors and materials?
So, you know, that is something we've offered for a long time. Having, the option for doing custom covers, we will continue to do that into the future as well. A lot of times, guys will send us, their yards of their material, and we'll put the patterns together so that we can fit that material onto that seat, which will match, the rear seats, whatever else they're doing in the vehicle.
And how do we go about doing that? Do we contact you guys, or do we go through a dealer and they set it up?
So, the best way is actually work through your dealer. If you don't have a dealer that's close to you, yeah, absolutely, give us a call. We got a customer service group that's available that can help assist. But really, the best way is through the dealers, because those guys are can help coordinate everything. They're really attentive to new owners' needs, and can help us get everybody connected together the best.
Yeah. Okay. So where can we find you guys online?
So it would be Recaro Automotive. And let's see. That's the best place to find us online.
So RecaroAutomotive.com is the website. And there's their dealer list up there. So if we want to go someplace locally and check out out seats and try them on.
Yep. No, absolutely. So there's dealer list is in that website.
Yeah.
And it's the best place to start, and get those make that connection with your dealer.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the time. Have a good SEMA week.
Yeah. Thank you. You too.
Okay, now we're in the Comp Performance Group booth here. We got so many big brands going on. We're here with my friend Mark Campbell. Good to see you again, Mark. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
We got the big banner above us. We got TCI Transmissions, Fast Automotive, all the air and fuel components.
Yeah, fuel
right,
injection
of course,
and everything.
Cams, Zex Nitrous Kits, Inglis, RHS Heads. There's a whole bunch going on here. It's all sort of packed in one booth. I did see that you guys put our friend Lake Speed Jr. and his driven oil down.
Well, we got to keep him segregated,
yeah,
right?
You put him down.
Push him off to the side a little bit.
Yeah, so. he's over there by himself in his own little booth playing with his lubricants.
That's right. Yeah.
We just had him in the studio not too long ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always great when he comes in. But so, of course, we're here. We're at SEMA. This is the greatest place to show off all these new parts. You guys have a ton of things, but we're going to pick a few that we think are pretty neat.
Yep.
And the one thing I want to start with is it's Comp Cams. And so you have some new cam packages, but also a new finishing process or coating or something that's on the cams.
Yeah, so we kind of debuted the MSE or micro surface enhancement last year on the camshafts, specifically on the LS stuff last year. We came out with that, but now we're actually offering that as an upgrade to any roller camshaft. So for basically $100, you can add that on to any camshaft, and you get that same premium finish.
Any new camshaft. Somebody's buying something new, they can add $100 to it. Explain what it is. What are you doing to the cam for that process, and what's the benefit?
Well, basically what we're doing is we're taking and making that surface as smooth as we possibly can. And really, trying to explain it in simple terms. If you get Billy Godbold in here or something like that, he'll go off talking all technical. But basically what it's trying to do is create as much surface area on the camshaft for the lifter to contact. So, of course, the more you can spread that load out across the entire face of the camshaft, the better it's going to be. So it's going to provide better wear on the camshaft over years.
Okay.
It will also provide just simply a smoother surface for that roller to roll over and make the valve train more stable. So it's a pretty neat deal.
It's funny because you look at the cams and everything looks like you polished it for the show, like you, almost like you chromed it or polished it just for the SEMA show floor, but that's the way they look now.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we try and stress to the customers is we're not doing this to make it look shiny. It's a byproduct. The fact that it looks beautiful is honestly something we discussed as we were doing this process, and we almost hope that the camshafts came out not looking as nice as they did, because we don't want to think that we're trying to cover something up or polish something or whatever. One of the things we've discovered is if the camshaft is ground incorrectly at first, the polishing process actually makes it look worse.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one thing that people need to know is that we're not covering something up. We're truly trying to make that surface better and make the camshaft last longer and perform better. And that's what it's all about.
Does that polishing process help in break-in in any way?
It certainly does.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's getting rid of the peaks and the valleys, basically. When you look at a surface finish on any type of metal, it looks like a mountain range. So we're taking off the tops of those mountain ranges and making those peaks and valleys less. And so, yes, it definitely does help. And that's one thing people don't even understand about a roller cam.
Yeah.
There is a break-in on a roller cam. It's not like a flat tappet camshaft, obviously, but there is a break-in process, and this does help that.
You do this process for flat tappet cams as well?
We're just starting to experiment with that, actually. Speaking of Lake, he was actually doing some testing here just recently. We got some camshafts done. He was doing some cam and some oil testing at the same time.
Yeah.
And we actually do have a couple of flat tappet cams that we did the MSE polish on, and I'm telling you just a little tidbit. It's looking good.
It's looking good.
Yeah, it's really going to help the break-in process.
If you think about, we have like coating processes and polishing processes for like rear end gears and stuff. And really, that's more just about the break-in. Like it's a quicker break-in period. You know,
absolutely.
Instead of doing 500 or 1,000 miles and accelerating and decelerating to get sort of even wear initially on both sides of the gear.
Yes.
It's like that's... You'll spend a couple extra $100 on getting the rear gear polished, but it's really for break-in. After that, it's not making much of a difference. But on cams, break-in is super important.
It's very important.
Anything flat tap it is even more important.
Yeah.
So if you can...
Well, oil is, of course, vitally important to a flat tappet camshaft's life. And, of course, that's why we've got this great partnership with Lake and Driven Oil on that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely this MSE process is starting to show some very, very positive signs towards doing that. We actually had a camshaft, flat tappet camshaft, with no parkerizing on it at all, which, I mean, the parkerizing process that we do is really to help break in. So we actually made a couple of camshafts that were unparkerized with this MSE polish on them and put them in an engine and broke them in. And like I said, we'll share some more data as we kind of get through it, but exciting so far.
So talking about cams, what are some of the new cam packages that you guys have now? It seems like LS is the jam these days.
Absolutely.
Everybody's doing LS stuff.
LS swapped the world. Right?
Everybody swapped the world, right?
So what we've come out with is a really, really cool line of thumper camshafts. Everybody's kind of familiar with the thumper of the old, but we've kind of reinvigorated that a little bit, but on a different level with these LS engines. So what we've got is our new thumper NSR series camshafts, and the NSR stands for no springs required.
Right.
So you don't need to change your valve spring. It'll work with a stock spring. Now, we do also have a stock replacement that's a little bit better than a stock replacement spring if you do need to. But the beauty of these camshafts is you can slide them right into the engine. Nothing else required. The Stage 1 camshaft makes 68 horsepower over stock, and the Stage 2 makes over 90 horsepower.
Okay.
So with just a simple camshaft swap, and then, I mean, if you add headers and all kinds of other stuff, obviously it's just going to enhance that even more.
But it's a thumper cam, so it's got
it's got the real killer lope to it, but the cool part is they make good power. That was one of the things with the thumper cams of old.
When they
came
out 8 or 10 years
ago. Yeah, they sounded awesome, and you know what? They made really good power, but they were very RPM limited.
Yeah.
This package is not that way. It sounds awesome. It's got that thump to it, but they make horsepower all the way to, you know, 65, 6800, 7000 RPM.
So you want some of that rumble at idle.
Yep.
But you still want drivability and a good
Exactly.
You know, and this not way too much cam.
Yeah, and this camshaft is really giving you the best of both worlds. It gives you the thump, gives you the drivability and the power.
Yeah.
So it's pretty exciting.
So and on the topic of LS, I haven't gotten into them quite as much as you guys obviously have. But tell me about the rocker system that you guys have developed that's out there for...
So we're very excited about this. It's honestly one of those things that I looked at.
I love seeing when you go, tell me about roller rockers, which is the nerdiest thing ever. And they're like, oh, man, I can't wait to tell you about this. Yeah. These are so... We're so happy about this product that you're never going to see because it's inside your engine.
Yeah, it's covered up and you never get to see it. Exactly. But this product, honestly, is so simple. It's one of those things that when I saw it for the first time with our engineers, I went and looked at it and went, damn, how come I didn't think of that?
Yeah.
Right? Basically what it does is it takes a stock rocker arm, which is a very, very proven design on the LS engines. We put a bronze bushing into the inside of that rocker, and then we have a one-piece shaft that ties all those rockers together. The beauty of it is you take the stock rockers off, you bolt this on, there is no machining, no messing around, no nothing. It is simply a direct bolt-on piece. And it is stable beyond imagination.
So if you want durability, if you want longevity and a much more stable valve train,
this is the way to go.
You guys basically have a shaft mounted rocker conversion kit.
Well, and really,
if your rockers are in good shape already, you're trying to.
Well, and this actually comes with brand new rockers. So this kit comes with new rockers and the shaft. It's a complete assembled system that you bolt on.
So you don't need to
use your old rockers. Okay. You can just take and sell those or do whatever you want with them, sell them to your buddy, and move on. So this is a complete brand new system that bolts on. And it really fits a beautiful price point because before what we had was either you take your stock rocker and use it, which costs nothing, or you take a stock rocker and put like a trunnion kit in it, which was a nice upgrade. But then really the next step was if you wanted to go to something like this, you were into a Jezel or a TND rocker system that was $1,500, $1,800, $2,000.
Yeah.
Well, this rocker system prices in at $599.
That's excellent.
So it's really right there at the perfect price point and a phenomenal product. We've had it on engines, solid roller stuff beyond 10,000 RPM, hydraulic roller stuff beyond 9,000 RPM. So it's incredibly stable and a great complement to some of our new cam packages.
Tell me a little bit about the new manifolds that you guys have here. Now, we saw prototypes of this. We were geeking out over it last year.
We teased you last year with
it. I think we were talking to Trent, Trent Goodwin, about it last year. I guess go ahead and explain it.
So it's our LSX-HR intake manifold is what we're calling it, made by Fast. And it's a complete polymer intake, similar to the material that we used on our other Fast intakes, but still very different. This thing is specifically designed for boost. So it actually has a fiberglass reinforced polymer. This intake manifold is rated for beyond 40 pounds of boost. I think we're putting about a 45 PSI boost number on it, but I can even tell you it'll take a bunch more than that, but we've got to leave some safety margin in there.
You should run more than 45 anyway.
Most people don't need that anyways, but it's there. The beauty of this intake manifold is it's extremely tunable. It has different runner lengths. It'll have three different runner lengths that you can buy with it, and it's basically a snap-on type top piece that goes on. We have a short, a medium, and a long. It'll come shipping with the long, which is what most people will need for higher torque and good power to probably about 8,500 RPM on a medium cubic inch type engine. But the intake manifold is set up, boost ready, big throttle body will go onto it. It has the ability to put nitrous bungs into it. It's a really, really cool design. And the fact that it's a polymer intake makes it very, very light and it doesn't heat soak. And those are the two big performance things that people really, really like is it doesn't get hot underneath the hood.
So it's sort of a two-piece design. It has the lower manifold and then the top bolts to it.
Correct.
With the throttle body opening. But inside there's individual stacks.
Those stacks.
Runners.
Yep.
And you can snap them in. You can just unbolt the top. Is it O-ringed?
Yeah, it's got a rubber O-ring that's built right into it. So you unbolt the top. And those pieces just basically push in a quarter turn and they lock into place. They got a rubber O-ring on them that keeps the pressure on them so they don't come loose or anything like that. It's a really, really cool design. And like I said, you can tune it very specifically for what type of engine, whether it's cubic inch or RPM or how much boost you're running, whatever. You can really, really custom tailor this manifold to exactly what you need to make it perform how you need it for your engine.
It's pretty slick and it's good looking stuff. Like I said, we saw the prototype of it last year and messed around with, taking the top off and looking at all the things and then And then Trent was like, this is so new. We're not even supposed to show it. I was like,
it was a little premature last year, but we were so excited about it. We wanted to show some people. So,
it looks good now. All finished up. It looks pretty good.
Yeah. So, and it'll come complete with fuel rails and everything like that as well. So it's going to be a very complete kit.
I guess the last thing we should touch on is, electronics and technology seem to be playing such a big part.
Yes.
Year after year as we come out here, everything is more and more electronically controlled. People ask me all the time, they're like, I sit down with some of the suspension guys and they got, here's a new spring and sway bar kit. And I was like, yeah, but your phase one, suspension kit is going to be a handheld tuner.
Yep.
Right? And then it's going to be a tuner with springs and a tuner with sway bar because everything's so computer controlled now.
Absolutely.
What are you guys doing in that space?
Well, we got some very exciting electronic-related items. One of the newest ones that we have is actually in TCI, and we have a Bluetooth module that plugs into our transmission controller that you can actually get an app on your iPhone or your Android device, and you can control your transmission through your telephone. Not much of a telephone, I guess, anymore. But
explain to us why we want to do that. How are we going to do it and not break the transmission?
Well, there's a couple unique. The beauty of it is it still uses our Easy technology, which really doesn't require any knowledge necessarily of tuning a transmission. But it allows you to do a couple things. You can switch shift points. You can modify the firmness of the shift on the fly with your phone as you're driving.
Okay.
The other cool part is it has a lot of data logging ability. So you can, when you're driving down the road, you can see all of the functions that are going on with the transmission, which is really, really cool. People like stuff, right? They like to be able to see stuff and touch and feel and see. And of course, everybody's got a phone in their pocket. So it's a really, really neat deal as far as that goes. The other really cool feature that we've integrated into this thing is basically like an anti-theft type of system. So you can actually deactivate this controller with your phone at any given time. So as you walk away from your car, you could deactivate this device and your transmission,
your car won't drive. Yeah. You could shut your transmission off, which is a weird thing to be able to do.
It was something that we kind of thought of at the last minute. It's like, hey, wow, we could do this.
Yeah.
So that same technology with the Bluetooth connectability, I guess, to electronic devices is going to be something that we're going to expand on a bunch over the next few years. So you're going to see that same technology get into some of the EFI stuff.
So right now, it's not like you can go out and buy a new Camaro and then you can get this device and can control the transmission. You need the transmission controller. So this is mostly for...
It's basically designed for like our 4X and our 6X transmissions that we build. The TCU basically that controls those, this module plugs into that at this point and can control those transmissions.
Right. So if you're building your car or doing some upgrades or like you see here in the SEMA show floor, just all the hot rods and muscle cars that are using those transmissions.
Exactly.
They want that transmission controller anyway.
Yep.
So you're adding that next level.
And this is a retrofit product, so it'll plug into an existing product that we have, or you can buy it as a complete new kit as well. So it's kind of neat. It works with old stuff too. So,
Awesome. I appreciate all the great stuff that you guys are doing here.
Well, thank you.
Real quick, how's the world of nitrous? What's good?
Well, I think...
has it sort of faded off? Or
no, it certainly hasn't. I mean... Turbos right now, of course, are all the rage. Everybody's got a turbocharger, and I think that nitrous is still out there. It's still a pretty cheap power adder. I mean, the price of nitrous has changed a little bit over the last year or so, but, I mean, we still sell a ton of ZEC stuff. We got a couple of really, really good systems. I mean, we just came out with one for the new Coyote engine. I guess it's not that new anymore, but we got a nitrous plate for the Coyote. We got all kinds of different fogger systems. So it's still...
And who's mostly the audience on those now? Are street guys still doing it?
Absolutely.
It's more of a weekend drag racer? Or
I think a little bit of both, actually. I mean, the street guys definitely like it because it's something they can turn on and off right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's
super
easy. Whereas the supercharger or turbocharger is kind of always there, whereas the nitrous, you can turn it on and off as you need it.
You know, we're talking about computer-controlled systems. That's kind of where ZEC fits in, right?
Yep.
Like, it's more of a sort of a computer-controlled...
Yeah, it kind of has its own management system built in. Everything ties into a box, and it's all controlled through there. So it really simplifies the use of nitrous as well. So it takes the guesswork out of it, I guess.
Exactly,
And that's where we've really had good success with that line, is it's simple, anybody can use it. You don't have to have much knowledge. I mean, read the basic instructions and install it yourself or have it installed, and it works. And you're not going to tear up your engine.
Well, I love it. Say hi to Trent for me. I know he had a family emergency.
Yes, he did, unfortunately.
Went back home. But, yeah. Well, we talked to Lake. We talked to Chris Douglas. And you're kind of throwing us off because all these boys got their accent. They're all from Tennessee and stuff. And,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you're Canadian.
I am, so.
How did you end up at Comp Cams?
I got lost. I was just driving along one day. I just started
heading to Florida, going south for
exactly.
vacation. And stopped to get some parts and never left.
Well, I mean, for years and years and years, I had my own shop. My dad and I actually had our own shop up in Edmonton, Alberta. I was a Comp customer and knew all the guys there. Rick Sparks especially was somebody that I knew very well. And over the years, just maintained a very good relationship with them. And as years went by, we ended up actually selling our shop. And I went on and did a couple other little things in the meantime, but always kind of kept in contact. And one year at the SEMA show, actually, Rick kind of called me into the booth, waves me over and kind of points, you know, you need to sit down and let's have a talk. And anyways, here we are.
That's it. So you never left. You're still here.
Yeah, exactly. I'm still here.
I'm glad you are. This has been good stuff. So I know, again, there's a bunch of different companies all part of the Comp Performance Group, but where can we find you guys online?
CompCams.com is the primary website. That'll definitely direct you to all the other ones, too. FuelAirSpark.com. Those two are our primaries. TCI Automotive, of course, is for the transmissions. And CPG Nation Live, as well, is another good website to go to. We have a lot of our shows and events that we go to are all broadcast on there.
Right on.
And, of course, on Facebook. You can find us there.
And you're right. We do know that Comp Cams is sort of the home base of this stuff, and it links to all the other brands as well. So just definitely remember that.
Yep.
And you guys will be good.
Absolutely.
Mark, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And
thank you.
Like we said before, we're going to grab some more photos and put all this stuff up online.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Let's take a quick break and talk about Dodge. Your authorized Dodge dealer invites you to experience a world of performance, design, and fuel efficiency. Schedule a test drive today. Just go to Dodge.com or visit your local Dodge dealer to learn more about the exciting offers on our powerful lineup. Back to the show. All right, we're sitting here now with Jack Roush Jr. Thanks for having us come over here. We're out in front of the SEMA show where there's the big drift pad, and you guys are making a hell of a lot of noise out there.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I don't know. SEMA never gets old. It's it's just a new year. It feels like we never left, honestly.
Yeah. You guys are going to hear this in the background as we do this. Justin Pollock, our buddy we talked to several times before, he's out there as well. And funny story about Justin is he's been driving with you guys for a while now, and he's been doing the ride-alongs out here. And we went out with a bunch of your guys at SEMA a couple years ago, Jay and
Andy
and Eddie and all the guys, and we made Justin go with us.
Oh no!
And he's like, guys, I can't stay all night. I've got to be in the car. I got to be drifting at 8 in the morning. We're like, we're not staying out late. Don't be a wuss. Sorry. We're going to do this. Don't be a wuss. And we were all so tired. We just wouldn't tell Justin how tired we were. And we stayed till like 3-4 in the morning.
Oh no.
And then Justin's like, I can't do it anymore. I'm throwing in the towel. And then he did. And then finally we're all like, oh good. Now we can go to bed. We were just trying to keep him up as late as possible. So we had to come out here and drive in the next morning. He goes, I can barely move. What happened? And we're like, oh yeah, we were just messing with you all the time. We were just trying to keep you up because we knew you had to drive.
Right.
You know, we slept in till 10, but he's like, what? We had a great time with him just trying to bust his chops because we knew he was going to be out here driving the car. Oh,
yeah,
by the way,
that wasn't very nice.
No, super dangerous, and I was driving your car, but it's a good thing he knows what he's doing over there.
Yeah.
So you've been doing some racing, and we've talked about this at SEMA's in the past as well. You're doing – it was Pirelli World Challenge for a while as well, right? And and what are you racing now?
So in 2006 – well – do you want me to take a step
back?
Yeah. Starting from the beginning. So I started go-karting when I was 6 years old, and it was with go-karts. It was during a time when my dad didn't have another race team, so he started one, and it was with me go-karting. And we did that for 5 years, won 4.5 championships. I continued go-karting here and there after that point, but, you know, didn't do a whole lot of racing until I was an adult, and I wanted to get back into it. Did a little bit of drag racing, which was really cool. I have a ton of respect for people who do that. And in 2006, I had the chance to do some road racing in what was called the Grand Am Cup with Dean Martin. And the name of the team at that time was Rehagen Racing. And it's basically, the name has changed quite a bit with sponsors and mergers, but as of last year, it was the IMSA Continental Tire Series.
Okay.
And I did a little stint, just 2 years, in the Pirelli World Challenge. And road racing is really my thing. You know, I drift when I come out here, but I'm not a Formula D guy. You know, I'm just out here having fun. But
yeah. I think we have the Mangria logo on one of on one of your cars.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the I saw it over.
We
I saw
were
it over.
To sell.
Yeah, it was over in your shop for a while, or in your collection over there, right?
Yep.
And I know that car is for sale, right? Is it still? It's still for sale. I put it up. We put it up on Facebook a while ago. But what year is that Mustang?
It is a Boss 302. They don't really give them model years.
Yeah.
They give them.
What year were you racing? It was probably four years ago.
2014.
Yeah, that sounds about
15?
Right.
Yeah, 2014 and 15 in that series. So that car was from 2014 with the Mangria logo, and that was for Long Beach.
Yeah,
which is really cool. I love that track.
Yeah, that's a fun event. We love going down to Long Beach. How'd you do this past season?
It was kind of a tougher year. We had a bunch of mechanical issues, and we ended up not running the whole season. But it was
racing's expensive.
Yeah, and it's it's up and down. We had some issues. Some years things really click. Other years, it seems like there's always something about to go wrong. It was a down year this past year. The year before, we had some mechanicals, but we podiumed or won every time. We didn't have an issue. So, it's kind of feast or famine.
Yeah. And you were running a Mustang. You were running one of the new chassis, the S550.
That's right.
Yeah. Because the other car we were talking about wasn't the S550, right?
Yeah. So the current car is really advanced technology, really high cost. It's, I'm not sure of the exact price, but it's like $225,000 to $250,000.
Yeah.
Where the previous car, I believe, was closer to half that. At the same time, the technology in it is really advanced, and it's all of road racing, or at least the pro level road racing, is for production cars is going to GT4.
Yeah.
Which is a new homologation from Europe. So these cars that we're running, they're the same in World Challenge, IMSA, in Europe, which is kind of cool.
That's right. I was reading about that. Multimatic or something does a lot of the development on those cars, right?
They
and they're
do.
Kind of sealed in a sense, right? There's only so much you can do to these cars. And there was a big change. Like, I guess they were selling the cars for, $125, $150, but there was a lot of finishing work and things that you guys had to do to dial them in. Now the cars are roughly $250,000, but they're trying to create parity and less work for you guys. So more cost up front, but hopefully less cost down the line of the racing season. But it's anytime you kind of switch things up that way, it's different because you have to raise money differently. You need to, get the sponsors up front and make that big investment up front. So it's
right.
Racing's a tough thing.
Oh yeah. Well, the cost never seems to go down.
It's, yeah.
It is very expensive, but it's at the same time the technology. The cars. It's amazing what they do for being a production. Chassis.
Yeah. The new cars, the new Mustang, such a good looking car, and man, in race trim, like what we're talking about, the GT4, that's a good looking car.
Oh yeah,
that thing's sharp.
Yep.
Yeah, that looks kind of badass. So tell us what's going on with Roush Performance.
So we got a lot here going on at SEMA. We're showing at our booth a 2018 F-150.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have our Stage 3 2019 Mustang here. A few other vehicles on display in the show. But, yeah, we're really, you know, kind of going back to our roots, talking about the F-150, especially in the Stage 3. We haven't had a Stage 3 in how long has it been?
Quite a few years.
Yeah, it's been a little bit, just with model year changeover. A lot of pent-up demand, so there's a lot of excitement around it. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. The F-150 used to be 600 horse. Now it's 650 supercharged. We also went, we'll be going
to... Are they off-road trucks or street trucks?
We have both.
The Roush versions. They're both.
Yeah, we have an off-road truck, which is here. And I don't believe we have a Nightmare truck here, do we? Okay. Yeah, I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Way so too much is going on for me
here
to keep
somewhere,
track of.
But here in your booth, you've got the off-road truck.
That's right.
Yeah, and you're running. You guys develop your own superchargers. When we went over there for a visit like a year or two ago, we kind of got the walkthrough on that. But it seems like everyone's using the new Eaton screws, the 2650s. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, so we consider our superchargers kind of core to our brand, and we're very unique in that we're here at SEMA, which you think of as an aftermarket performance show. We really don't think of ourselves as aftermarket, even though we do sell superchargers and other parts separate from the vehicles, but we really pride ourselves in making packages that you can buy as parts, but are also part of pre-title vehicles that are fully warrantied. They're reliable, very high quality, you know, all that.
Yeah, so when you guys buy a Roush Mustang or a Roush F-150, that's basically Roush is the manufacturer, right? Like, you're buying a Roush vehicle. I mean, just because it's built on a Ford platform, it's much different than any tuner car, if you will. This is
right. You know, not to take anything away from Ford, you know, just the opposite. You know, the packages, you know, the Ford based chassis that we build up on, it's amazing what Ford is doing right now. And, you know, we just kind of put our spin on it and, you know, make our vision of what we want it to be.
Yeah. So how many variations of the F-150 do we have? And then we'll get into the Mustang side.
So there's off-road, which is non-supercharged, an off-road supercharged, and our Nightmare. Nightmare is 2018. We also have a sport truck, which is technically, you know, we look at it as a street performance vehicle, but it's not supercharged as well. So I guess four different flavors.
Okay.
And there's, you know, almost limitless combinations of, you know, base chassis and, you know, optional components for our packages as well.
And the Mustangs have always been a big thing, you know, since the SN95 might be when you guys started with the Roush Mustangs, right?
Right.
Been a fan of them for years. I've always sort of saw the cars that you guys built as kind of the only thing out there with an OE quality to it. The fit and finish of the body kits and the pieces that you guys make have always been fantastic. And we've said it before where it's just the quality of parts, I think, is really what makes the difference between the Roush stuff and a lot of other people. I mean, now it's super competitive even more than ever, so everybody's making good stuff. But
absolutely.
I kind of felt like you guys were kind of the leader in that. We've been lucky enough to drive a handful of the Roush Mustangs over the years, various stages of Roush Mustang, and the Raptor, Roush Raptor, with a 600 horsepower Roush Raptor that we might have jumped a few curbs. We don't have a lot of off-road stuff in LA.
Right.
So you just find like the median on like Santa Monica Boulevard or a McDonald's parking lot. You just run over everything you can, and you're like, I didn't feel a thing. The suspension's fantastic. This is great.
Yeah, that was a Prius, by the way.
Yeah, right.
I'm just kidding.
That's what we ran over. It was a Prius. So the new Mustang platform is fantastic. We've got 460 or so horsepower in the base. So supercharging is the most bang for the buck. And the new 2650 superchargers that you guys have, you got to be pushing like 700 horsepower, right?
710, yeah.
Yeah. On the good gas of the world or shitty California gas?
Pump gas. I don't know. I'm not familiar with California gas.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Is it?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's 91 octane minus, like, because it's barely. I think we can get away with this stuff, and you guys know this far better than I do, but what you guys can do in supercharging, because of how advanced just the cars are coming from the manufacturers with knock sensors and so much control over timing and sensitivity to octane and stuff. You can probably pick up a brand new Mustang that's 460 horsepower, get a bad tank of gas, and it'll be 430 horsepower, but the car adapts and makes it work, right?
Right, also, absolutely.
You can get a new Mustang, you can put 87 in it or 91 in it. So you guys must be... The complex part is probably not making the supercharger. It's getting the tune. You know, how do you make 710 horsepower in that car?
That's actually really observant. Something we probably don't tell the story of enough is how much we invest in just the calibrations for a vehicle package. You know, when you look at, you know, all the way from development, which is testing and, you know, developing all over the country in different environments, to going to places to get it tested and certified, you know, we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it is a big investment, especially, you know, when you look at how, you know, it's a very exclusive population, you know, a very exclusive build that we do. We don't make that many of them. So we have to be careful, you know, that we hit the mark and put something out there that the market wants and, you know, that the cost justifies that.
It's actually, it is pretty interesting. How many Roush Mustangs or vehicles do you think you guys have made over the last 20 years?
That's a great question. I think it's over 20,000.
Yeah.
I think it's like 25,000. Maybe I'm wrong, but...
Yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot of them out there. I mean, it's a good amount, right? It's good collectability, but it's enough to say we really know what we're doing.
Right. Yeah, right? And that's going back from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, that's every year, you know, it varies, but it's, you know, only a small part of that.
So what's on the horizon for you guys?
That's a great question. Like, the market's constantly changing. I can't give any secret information, but some hints are trucks are big.
Trucks,
you know,
are big.
Off-road is big. Mustang, I don't think you'll ever see that go away.
Yeah.
But
it is pretty interesting, and everybody's talking about the Ford commercial that's out now, and there's the little two-second flash of some sort of futuristic Mustang, and people are like, could it be a hybrid? Could it be electric? Could it be whatever? And it seems like there's probably something that you guys are thinking about, you know, not just 3 years or 4 years, but 10 years down the line, and going, hey, what if the Mustang is a performance hybrid, and how do we start to extract more performance from that? We know what we're doing with suspension, but now we've got batteries, we've got more weight, we've got things like that. And then, you know, there's we've sort of two schools of thought in the hybrid world. You know, we've got, or the electric world, we've got, you know, the fuel efficient MPG cars, but then we've got a handful of the cars that are hybrid for the sake of boosting performance. Acura NSX and McLaren and all of that technology is super trick, but it's going to start to trickle down to more affordable cars. And why couldn't we have, you know, a Mustang that has, you know, some sort of electrification to create boost? Like if you have a turbo Mustang or a turbo V8 or a turbo V6, then we add an electric motor on the transmission, possibly, that fills the gap between, you know, that turbo lag.
Right.
You know, that's missing, you know. I mean, that's maybe McLaren P1 technology now, but, you know, who knows where it goes years from now, right?
Right, absolutely. And quite honestly, it's very hard to predict where things are going to go, you know, what the market's going to demand.
Yeah.
You know, we're constantly looking at kind of pushing the limit of performance and, you know, doing it with OE quality. So,
So where can we find all the Roush Performance stuff online?
At RoushPerformance.com.
And then we're looking forward to seeing you race again. You're going to be back next season?
It looks like it. We're trying to get our program together right now. But if
when
you don't, you'll
start?
January in Daytona.
Yeah.
So it would be with IMSA.
Plenty of time.
Yeah.
it's coming up quick. It seems like it's never ending. It's just like,
right. It's
like anytime you get into it, like, all right, good season. Now we got to start all over, raise more money and work the sponsorships and develop the car. And that's it. That's what racing's about, right?
Yep.
Well, I'm glad you're doing it because we got great cars out here as a result of all the stuff you guys are doing and your road racing, your drag racing. You know, it's good. Jack, thank you so much. We appreciate the time. We're going to run off to the next interview, but have fun out here. I'm going to come back later, and we're going to go for a ride.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. All right. Now we're here in the Brembo booth with our friend Dan Sandberg. How are you?
It's become a yearly thing
now,
hasn't
it? See, I'm telling you. It really is.
We should do this more than yearly. We'll just come and sit in the convention center.
Just come down here and do it. Well, the problem is we're so far away. This is our only chance to kind of get together and do this.
It's sort of halfway.
Yeah. So how is it being the boss at Brembo?
It's good. You know, it's a great company. I mean, you know, I come to shows like this. And even though it's a lot of moving and, you know, going from place to place and doing interviews and stuff like that, it's good to see Brembo everywhere. I mean, you look at this building right now, and the building is festooned with Brembo calipers.
Oh my gosh, they're everywhere. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, we talked about it. I got them on my M3.
I got them
on my 2001 M3. Which worked out great. We did our big photo shoot with HRE wheels, and we got our bright red Brembos right behind those.
You know, big wheels are great. There's big wheels, and you need to fill those wheels with Brembo. Right?
That's right.
And I think the biggest difference you see this year is, you know, everybody talks about this conversion from cars to SUVs and trucks, you know.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a lot more Brembo now on SUVs and trucks, which
I was
is
driving
great.
A truck the other day, and all I kept thinking about is it needs brake upgrade. Like, there's so much nosedive, and I get that. That's with the trucks, but I just felt like I wasn't getting on the brakes hard enough and that it was too hard, and the truck wasn't slowing down. It's just like the weight makes all the difference, you know. Driving the M3, which is fairly light, and then my other car doesn't have Brembos, but it's an Alfa Romeo Spider. It's a 92 Alfa Romeo Spider. That car doesn't weigh anything, so you just get on the brakes a little bit, it slows down. I mean, it's not the best performer in the world, but it just slows down. And then you get in a truck, and you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe
the factory lets these things drive this way. Most people, they talk about, like, pickups. You know, you say, oh, I got a pickup truck. You know, you picture a guy who's a construction worker or whatever, and you're like, you know, what's he need Brembo for, right? But that's not the definition of pickups now, right? I mean, these pickups are luxury vehicles, performance vehicles in a lot of cases, plus the ones that haul a lot of stuff. So when we started looking at pickups, we said, geez, you know, this is a great opportunity here. You got huge wheels. So, and usually you look at those huge wheels, and you have those little tiny, you know, sliding brakes inside.
Yeah.
And we said, first of all, aesthetically, it looks terrible.
Yeah.
So this is a great opportunity to put Brembos. But then you get to the issue that you're talking about, is people put a lot of stuff in those trucks.
Yeah.
And they're finding out, geez, you know, they don't stop like their car. They don't stop like their SUV. And I think there's a functional place for Brembo in that regard. And that's what we're finding out. People who are putting Brembo on love it. They look great. But they're saying, geez, you know, my truck stops. I fill it up with bricks or dirt or whatever. And, I stop at the light and the car stops. I mean, so that's a great thing.
So this brings up a good point because we're here at SEMA. So we're talking mostly about aftermarket stuff. There's mostly sort of two things we're looking at with you guys are new kits that are available.
Mm-hmm.
And then new product, right? So we have new calipers or new discs there's always new stuff in the calipers.
And you take a look at the GM booth, and, you know, GM's been very, very active in getting Brembo out to the consumer when the consumer wants it on their vehicles. Not just OE original, but the aftermarket division, their performance division, is really offering Brembo. This year, we see Brembo on the Chevrolet, Chevrolet Silverado High Country, LTZ, and RST Street Concepts cars.
Okay.
So you see the availability, again, of another Brembo package from GM that's offered to the consumer. So you can... you know, you can tune your own car almost, you know, and do what you want to do. And we offer some great color, some great color combinations for that. And it's fantastic. So, you know, those are great opportunities. And you're seeing other OEs also offering certain kits, you know, that are available for not only cars, but also trucks.
So we have truck and SUV applications. Is it mostly GM products? Are we doing F-150s? Are we doing new?
We saw some Ford F-150s. Actually, there's one about 30 feet from here. And then that's one thing we're seeing. I think, you know, GM is ahead of the game because they saw this coming.
Yeah.
But you're seeing a lot of the tuners here who are doing a lot of trucks. How many Jeeps did you see here today? How many pickup trucks did you see? A lot. I mean, more than I've ever seen at this show. But there's a lot of Brembo on all those vehicles.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of kits that you can get from Brembo that'll fit your cars and your trucks now.
And what's new in the product world? You guys are coming up with these crazy looking calipers. They're very sort of organic looking, and
I think they look really
they look amazing,
cool, don't
yeah.
they? I wasn't
very
sure.
Asymmetrical.
You and I talked kind of, last year, or maybe the year before, I think, about the BM8 that came out.
Yeah, we did.
It was an 8-piston monster caliper, which we made, by the way, for fitment on trucks and SUVs, the big wheels. I think you and I weren't sure. If I recall, a couple of years ago, we said, "Boy, that it looked like molded dough, into a caliper."
Right, but I get it. I mean, it's like, how do you make a caliper that large? And there's probably some aerodynamic factor to it. There's probably some weight factor to it. Like, how can you shape this thing or mold this thing to where?
And that's not accidental.
Are there?
Yeah, and it really isn't accidental. I mean, we use a technology called 4D technology. Which is a optimization process where we're looking at fit, finish, function, and we're trying to optimize the caliper to get the most weight to performance factor. And what you're seeing is, you know, the caliper, you know, it molds itself into that shape using this technology, the process that we use, and it has that form. So where there doesn't need to be weight, there isn't any. Where there aren't any pistons, there's no metal. So you have a lot of openings in the caliper. You have that kind of, I don't know, you called it organic look.
Yeah.
You almost can see the fit and the function of the caliper, right? You almost can see where the pistons are. There's bridges that go across the top for stiffness. And the caliper is super stiff. And we had an 8-piston model, the BM8, that came out, 18 months ago or so.
Right.
We now released at SEMA this year a 6-piston version, which will be our base caliper for a whole mess of applications out there that's going to be really cool. And it comes in 5 or 6 different colors. It is, as I said, stiffer than anything we've ever made. It is wider. So that was one of the issues we had. We had a lot of big rotors that were going in these vehicles.
Yeah.
And we could do the size, but we had trouble with the width of some of these rotors.
Right, so you could do a 15-inch rotor, but it's the thickness of that rotor that is adding a lot of weight, a lot of heft, and how do you get a caliper around that thing?
Exactly. And, you know, we had a lot of guys who were tracking, like Porsches, for example, and we're asking, can we get something that's, you know, track sensible? This will give us that possibility, I think, in a lot of cases. So you kind of have that road and track kind of capability, not only for Porsches, but for your cars that you're tracking. So it's really, really cool. And more braking surface. You know, I mean, you look at this is really a great caliper. It's optimized. It looks great. I'm looking right over your shoulder, actually. So.
Well, this other photo here, this blue one with the black background, like it looks mountainous, like it grew from the earth. It just sort of shaped, you know, like...
If you you can see it. If you go online, we have pictures of it on vehicles at Brembo.com, and you will see the caliper. It doesn't look exactly like it looks like we look at it. It actually looks great inside the car. I mean, it really looks high tech, but at the same time, it's pure Brembo.
And what's happening in brake pad worlds and rotor worlds?
Well, you know, rotors continue to get lighter and lighter. You say, well, how can you do that? You know, we keep talking about a lot of horsepower, and the rotors are getting bigger and bigger. But there's a lot of two-piece technology out there. So, you know, you take your basic iron rotor that you see every single day, and now they're looking at those rotors and saying, geez, you know, what can we do to optimize the rotor? Well, the biggest target is the hat section of the rotor.
That center section. You only need that strip of iron on the outside where the brake pad kind of hits it, right, as we're sort of kind of dumbing this down, if you will. But now what do you have left in the middle?
So we're actually seeing in some of our OE applications, the original equipment applications that we have, and we're also seeing in the aftermarket, which we've had, but we're seeing some new materials now. We're seeing two-piece rotors make it to the scene. So the hat section, if you will, other than the ring, if you will, that has to be iron, are made out of aluminum. They're made out of stamped steel. All these different components all these different alloys that are now lighter, a lot lighter. So you can take 20 to 40% of the weight of the rotor in some cases out. And they attach to the rotor using different types of technology. We have a lightweight rotor that we use a lot with Mercedes, for example, that's actually a press fit. So there's no attachments. It actually almost stamps itself right in.
So you eliminate, I don't know, a half a dozen fasteners, and they all weigh something, right?
Exactly. And that's offered on current production for a lot of Mercedes vehicles. So, you know, that's an interesting technology. And then we have the fastener world, which you see a lot of two-piece. We've been selling those for years. That's a very tricky technology. But we've mastered that, obviously, from a technology standpoint.
I can't imagine the difficulty in the press fit because there's so much heat cycling and so much expanding and shrinking of metals that...
You know, it's funny. The two-piece rotors, one of the benefits that we find is, you know, we talk about rotors taking a lot of heat, and they are. They're the item that takes heat. But you get that, you know, all the problems you have with that heat in a rotor where it more or less warps and you get, you know, the judder and everything else you see, you don't get as much of it with a two-piece rotor because of that separation, if you will, between the two materials. You know, think about it. If you had something that was totally fixed, you heat it up and it can't move, it has no choice but to warp, all right? But when you have a two-piece rotor, if there's a lot of heat, first of all, you get a lot more exit points for the heat. But second of all, it's not pinned, if you will, so it doesn't really want to warp. The hat section stays where it is, and then the ring itself, you know, we call it floats or more or less flexes as the heat's brought into it, and then it returns to shape after. So you don't get that warpage in the rotor. So it has some benefits: lighter weight, and it performs better in the long run.
Are we going to? Is there more of a heat dissipation with a different material on the hat? Like if you're doing an aluminum or something, that heat transfer from the iron going to the aluminum, does it?
You know, I would say I have to drag my engineers in here to figure that out. But, you know, obviously aluminum has always been a better product, if you will. You got to be careful, though, with aluminum, right? Doesn't take heat as well.
Yeah.
Your rotors could get quite mushy.
Right. So. But, again, we're just talking about the hat section of the heat is in the iron.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think on the two-piece side where you see aluminum, we're not using that in a lot of high-performance applications.
Yeah.
So it's not seeing as much heat as you would imagine.
And you could do a hat section and a stamped steel, but you can pocket it, you can lighten it by, it's not a, just a solid
exactly
disc,
a
if you
stamped
will.
Hat section, that we use for most of these rotors are really kind of interesting because they're very, very light. You know, a hat section, you know, that could be 5, 6, 7 pounds, but the stamped version is only 2, 3 pounds.
Yeah, so. Which is significant. Every pound counts on when you're... Yep. When it's on the corners like that.
And, you know, the original equipment guys are interested in that. They're looking for ways and you know, to take weight out of the vehicle, first of all, for a cafe, whatever happens to that over the next few years. But electrics are looking for specifically ways to lighten the vehicle because it's all about how long can you go, right? I was just reading an article the other day that said basically if you're making an electric car these days and it can't go more than 220, if it's under 220 miles on range, you know, you're not in business.
You got to
have something that's nearing that, you know, 270, 300 mile an hour range, or it's just not going to be a viable product.
And, you know, something we touched on a little bit last year was the future of braking and a brake by wire, for lack of a better term. Just no hydraulics at all, some sort of electronic braking.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind. I don't know if it'll be the next 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you will have a car that'll be totally brake by wire.
Right.
I think you'll get there in a transitional phase. So you're going to see maybe brake by wire in the rear of the vehicle with a hydraulic backup, and the front will still be hydraulic. Then you'll move maybe to brake by wire all four corners with some type of hydraulic protection. In electric vehicles, you have regenerative braking, which really isn't a braking mechanism more than an engine mechanism, but, you know, where you're basically gearing down, you have that protection also. So at the end of the day, I have no doubt everything's going to get electrified in the vehicle. Braking won't be an exception.
I mean, doing it would allow smarter braking systems, right? Where we start to eliminate the human out of the braking system.
Well, and we're finding that it's faster. I mean, when you touch a brake in a hydraulic system, it's fast, but electric is faster. I mean, you know, think about it. You know, that whole process of pressing a pedal, which then triggers either a hydraulic pump or the actual pressure itself, which then transfers back. You know, I mean, it all happens pretty fast, but not as fast as turning on a light. You know, and the light goes on.
Right.
It's quick and it goes. So we're finding it faster. We're also finding that in our brake-by-wire systems that we're designing now, you can fine-tune the brake system. So, you know, if you like a stiff pedal, you can tune the brake to be stiffer. If you like a softer pedal, so you can, I don't know, some people like to kind of ride that brake, or they like that little soft cushiness. You know, it's like sleeping, I guess. You know, you like a soft bed.
Right, they can just back off
bed.
On the sensitivity of it or something
exactly,
like that.
So. Exactly. And, you know, and one of the things we found is you take a look at, like, a Tesla vehicle, for example, where you can switch, you know, to any kind of, you know, do you want a sport ride? Do you want a sport plus ride? Do you want a track ride?
Right, you can
or
change
a Porsche.
The engine braking in the Tesla or simulated engine braking.
Or Porsches or BMWs or Mercedes. You all have those features now. One thing it's usually not touched is the brake pedal.
Yeah.
Now you can. So if you put it in a track mode, you get a much more sensitive brake.
And what about the discs, the rotors, the carbon or carbon ceramic, that technology? When do we start to see that trickle down into the more affordable cars in the aftermarket kits? Because, you know, of course we've seen Ferraris retrofit all day long. You can go and you can spend, you know, I don't know, $30,000 or something on, but you know, Brembo has made moves that we've talked about in the past, how, you know, a Focus RS and cars that are more affordable can come with Brembo brakes. How do we start to get, like,
I don't think you'll ever see carbon-carbon, all right?
Yeah.
So everybody's like, oh, can I get what they're doing? You know, carbon-carbon, I don't think you ever see carbon-carbon just because of all the characteristics of it, how it has to be warmed up for performance.
Right.
You aren't going to see that. But we have a carbon ceramic technology, which you do see now, and it's the kind of technology you see on, you know, you're going to see that technology on Porsches and Ferraris and a lot of the high-end vehicles, but you are now seeing some of that technology slip down into what I would call premium cars still, but performance cars like the Corvette, for example. You can buy a carbon ceramic package for a Corvette, and the pricing now on that technology is, I would say it's at least 30% lower than it was when I first started at Brembo, you know, over a decade ago. And I certainly see that technology will become more economical. It will never be, you know, $20 a rotor. You're not going to, you know, but I don't think everybody wants it, you know, on their cars. That has a tremendous bite. If you haven't driven a car with the carbon ceramic, it's an experience.
Yeah. But and everybody's obsessed whether they use it or not, right? You put it on your Corvette, and you know how many track days do you do? Maybe you do three a year, two a year, but you just love the idea of the lightweight, you know, the reduced weight from the carbon ceramic. And maybe there are some.
It's lightweight. It's low dust. The performance is spectacular. It's almost, to be honest with you, a lifetime braking system at the end of the day, particularly on some of the cars it gets put on. You know, where you're not going to put, you know, 80,000 miles a year on the car and take it out. But it's a, you know, it is a it is definitely a, what we would call a high performance braking system.
Yeah,
but it is a
what is
high
the
capability
between an iron rotor versus the carbon ceramic rotor in life. You know, like
it's as I said, you have carbon ceramic that can go. You know, I mean, depending on how you're driving, yeah. If you're tracking it
without
probably
shaving the rotors
not.
Down or doing any of that.
But if
right.
you like take a Porsche or take a Corvette, I mean, that's going to be a lot. You know, you're going to get over 150,000 miles at least on a carbon ceramic, provided you're not heavily tracking the car. You know, if you're out there on the track, you know, doing road courses and stuff like that, it's going to wear, but it's going to be 3, 4, 5 times the lifespan of an iron rotor.
Yeah. So. And how does it wear the brake pad differently than iron?
Well, a lot of the systems, you have carbon pads also, so you match those. So
yeah.
Similar characteristics. You know, you don't get a lot of dust. So what does that tell you? You know, there's not a lot of wear going on.
No,
so it's a very efficient brake system. There's a lot of great things about it, but it is expensive. I mean, it's not 4 times the cost of an iron system. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot.
100 times the cost.
It is 100 times the cost. Yeah, even on the OE level, you could go to BMW and price out a new M4 or something like that, and then like, oh, but if you want the brake option, it's $8,800.
Yep.
You know.
But again, I mean, if you are really a hard driver and you're tracking the car, you know, I don't know. I mean, for me, if I'm in the Porsche and I'm on a 911 and I'm going 120 miles an hour and I have to stop now.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want anything else.
Speaking of Porsches, how's your turbo?
Good, it's very good. he's doing well. We just went on a fall color tour.
Yeah,
and he enjoyed the colors quite a bit. Didn't see many of them, but you know,
it was Turbo S, right? 911
yes.
Turbo
yes.
S. Is it white?
It's white. It's white with a wine interior.
Yeah, and green rotors.
Lime green
calipers.
Lime green, special Brembo rotors.
Yeah, I remember.
It's funny though because it's a very similar color to what Porsche uses on their hybrids. So when people ask me, they say, "Geez, I've never seen that before." I say, "Well, that's a hybrid 911."
Yeah, that's the hybrid 911.
And they get all excited about that. It's like, really?
Where'd you get that? Well, you got to be the boss at Brembo.
I show them a couple AA batteries in the trunk.
That's what it is. well, thank you. We appreciate the time. There's so much more I'd love to get into, but we got to go do the next. I got to go do a live show. We're gonna do Shift and Steer live show. So. If you guys are listening to the CarCast, go listen to Shift and Steer as well.
Fair enough.
How's your podcast going?
It's going good. It's going good. As I guess some of the listeners know, we do an internal podcast at Brembo where we actually, you know, we talk about the stuff we talk about in business. So our safety, anything else going on in the different plants. We talk about new business awards. But the one thing we added several years ago is we added customers because some of our listeners said, geez, you know, it'd be really great if we can hear from people who are using our brakes.
Yeah.
So we've had everybody on the show from somebody you and I know. No, we haven't done that, have we?
No.
We have to talk about that.
Yeah.
All right, anyway. No, we've had everybody on there from, race car drivers to MotoGP riders to, guys from GM, Ford, Chrysler, Porsche, everyone using our products. And it's, you know, I think it's good. It's always good to hear from your customer. And when the customer gets the chance to talk to our engineers, you know, on the podcast, it really gets candid and exciting for them.
Dan, you've got a great podcast, and if you want to listen to it, all you have to do is get a job at Brembo.
There you go.
It's super easy.
Thanks for recruiting for us. I appreciate
there
it.
There you go. Sign up. Go to the recruitment website. And then where do we find out all the information about you guys? We just go to Brembo.com?
Brembo.com. That's the place to go. It's a great website. You'll see the
do we get all the
calipers.
Aftermarket stuff there as well? Or?
Yes, you can. And should I give them a hint? No? Can I do that or not? No? Well, I will say this. Go to the website and keep watching the website because we will have some interesting things going on in the aftermarket world within the next 60 days. It's going to be easier and easier to get Brembo rotors and pads quickly.
Okay. Well, maybe what we should do is in a month or two have you call in the CarCast and give us an update on what's going on.
We'll do that.
Excellent. Dan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We're going to eat tacos tonight?
I hope so.
Okay.
Hope
we'll see you there.
I think they may be in the shape of a caliper, from what I understand.
That kind of makes sense.
I've been working all day on that.
All right, Dan. Thank you so much. All right, one more quick break to talk about Continental. If you think of all the weird things you find in cars, and I'm not talking about French fries and melted crayons. I'm talking about live snakes, bizarre trinkets, and the kind of stuff that makes you just wonder about folks. Well, another thing that'll make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. I bet you didn't know there are OE in tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. There are also OE on a majority of BMWs and VWs. And now, Continental is launching their aftermarket multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series. These belts are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has the OE Technology Series Multi-V belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and in Canada. So listen, you guys get enough surprises working on cars and trucks already. A belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with the Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, visit OETechnologyseries.com. All right, we're back with more SEMA coverage right now. All right, we're back in the Center Force Clutches booth. We've been here year after year because we want to come over and see our buddy Will Beatty from Center Force.
He's a cool guy. He's a really cool
guy.
Is he?
He's a cool guy? Yeah. You've heard us shout at him on CarCast when Goldberg comes in.
Goldberg guy. I can take him.
Like a little shout out to Will Beatty. He'd be like, don't even bring him up.
He's upset.
He wants a clutch, I guess.
Yeah, he wants a clutch.
He wants a clutch. Everybody wants a clutch from you.
I told him, I said, I'll give you a clutch when Wanda, his wife, makes another chocolate pie for me. And we're good. We're going.
Yeah.
It's a good deal. I don't see the problem with it.
I don't think she'd argue with that. No. I just don't think she knows.
Yeah. Well.
Well, it's good to see you again, buddy.
Yeah.
Tell us what's going on with you. Well, you have your Jeep project.
I know
you picked up a Jeep. And
yep.
And which is interesting because you guys have been doing a lot of development on Jeep clutches, not just the drive down the 405 sit in traffic
nope.
Jeep clutch, but the kind of rock climber clutch.
Yeah, and we've been doing Jeep stuff for quite a while. And then obviously we came up with this high inertia flywheel that really helps the Jeeps. So, you know, the old six-cylinder Jeeps, they actually develop torque down low, where the new 3.6 and the 3.8 Jeeps, the earlier 3.8s, no torque. So the only way for us to develop torque was to put a heavy flywheel on it. And that made all the difference in the world in that Jeep for being able to go out.
It's an interesting thing because, you know, we talk so much about performance and racing and vintage racing and, you know, the Mustangs, the Dodge Demons. It's
you go
all
the
about,
other way. You go the other way. Lightweight.
Yeah, make everything lightweight. But you're doing some off-roading or some rock mm-hmm. climbing.
You want that inertia. Inertia is your friend. I tell people that it is your friend. You know, there is a degree when you too much inertia. Same thing with, you know, lightweight. You know, you take too much out and the thing just falls on its face when you let the clutch out. Same thing happened in the Jeep when you load them down. That's a heavy obstacle, the Jeep itself. So,
but it really does sort of speak to how much weight of something like the flywheel and whatever drive shaft and whatnot, how much that plays a role in how that car performs. You know, you cut a few pounds off a flywheel or add a few pounds.
It's substantial. It's depending on from, see, you got to look at it from the center out, from basically the center of the crank out. The farther you go out from center, the more effective that weight is. So that's when you see a slotting flywheels and stuff like that, we haven't really dropped a lot of so-called bathroom scale weight, but the inertia was removed a lot. And we do the same thing with the Jeep. We put a lot of weight on the outer edge because we want to have that inertia so that the weight of the vehicle doesn't pull the motor down and stall it out, which Jeeps are really easy to do, as I found out.
Yeah, it's an interesting analogy would be we're starting to see carbon fiber wheels show mm-hmm. up in the aftermarket, and in that space, yeah, you have something like a Shelby GT 350 or Ford GT with an all carbon wheel.
That's performance.
But there are companies like HRE or Forgeline or something doing carbon wheels, and it was funny because the wheel first came out, it was like an all carbon wheel. But if you do an aluminum center section and then the barrel of the wheel is carbon, that you're going to get more benefit from
right.
that
and strength.
Because that outer edge that swings the most right. is the lighter portion of
exactly.
it, right?
Exactly. Well, that's where it's more effective. As I say, the farther out you go, the more effective it is. Either way, light or heavy.
So. Yeah. So, so you have Jeep kits now that mm-hmm. are specifically designed for that.
Exactly.
So specifically designed for this yeah. for this application for off-roading and rock
and
climbing.
And having fun. We'll have to get you in one of these days.
Yeah.
Bring you up to Prescott. Prescott.
Prescott.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there.
Have you?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. It's I think little... my dad lived there for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he lived there for
a
while.
I learn something new every day.
Yeah.
There it is.
What are some of the other new applications you guys have? You have some LS application
yeah,
stuff.
We,
is it vehicle specific or is it more like crate motor
just
stuff?
Just LS. It's LS pretty much fits in everything. Go on yeah. a Jeep if you wanted to. But we came up with the 11-inch twin this year because many big power guys. Guys are really pushing the envelope. 2,000 horsepower in an LS is not uncommon. You don't see a picture of it here. It's actually out there and I can show you later. And then... You know, so those guys are, you know, we're looking to hold 1,800 to 1,900 foot-pounds of torque is what we're looking to hold with that and still have the drivability that we've always been kind of known for. So,
yeah.
Then we have our little 8 3/4 triples that work well in, the autocross stuff. And so we're still playing.
How is clutch technology advancing? Because everybody wants higher capacity, but still streetability and light pedal feel. And it used to be something like a twin disc clutch would be a monster to drive.
It's kind of hard to stay with it because the wants and needs are changing. Everybody wants more power, but they don't want to sacrifice any type of drivability. And that's what's hard to do. And what we do, you know, we may not be able to have the highest holding capacity, but we try not to sacrifice that drivability. And so trying to match our friction material with the clamp load and the weight of the flywheel and everything else and to that vehicle is the biggest challenge. You know, a lot of guys will still go out there with a really tall rear gear and wanting to put, you know, a heavy weight clutch in there. Well, that doesn't work. It's just, it's going to fall on its face. The best example I could give you is something like that is trying to take off in second gear. The clutch will just, you know, the weight of the vehicle just pulls the motor down and it just falls on its face.
Yeah. Now, how do you do it now? Now, when you start talking about a customer calls and says, I want to do a clutch upgrade because I just bought a new, you know, Camaro or Mustang or something, and, you know, but I just added a supercharger, and superchargers now could add 250 horsepower.
Yeah.
You know, like we just talked with the guys at Roush a minute ago, and a Mustang's 460 horsepower. When they're done, it's 710 horsepower,
yeah.
right? So
yeah. We ask them what they're going to do with it, drivability, you know, where's your main interest of driving? Is it on the street or is it on the track? And then what's your rear gear? Because that's real effective to the clutch. The rear gear, people don't realize how much that gearing changes the effects of that clutch. It can be detrimental to a clutch. But then the wrong gear choice back there will destroy a clutch in just no time at all. So just finding out everything that they're doing with the vehicle, the overall intended use, and then we can say, okay, here's the properly weighted flywheel for what you're doing. And here's the clutch choice that we would go with.
So, like, having that flywheel and have the whole system be too light, and you're right, if you're moving too much weight or you've got the wrong gearing to it, your engine's going to spin up, and by the time that clutch engages, you're already just kind of burning through it, right?
Right.
It's just
melting the thing
yeah,
down.
Yeah, it's just kind of melting it down.
It's awesome on the track.
So much life off of it.
Yeah, it's awesome once you're moving and on the track, but it's that taking off from a dead stop that just kills it. So...
And now we're looking at multiple discs. Like, this has been around for a while now yeah. in street trim.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you make that livable? We say twin disc clutch, but they're not actually twins. Is like one thicker than another or
no,
one's different?
They're still the same.
They are.
You know, we do a triple as well. And now we're looking at four disc because guys are wanting more. They want it as light as possible. And so, you know, the only way for us to be able to hold the power is to start stacking.
Yeah.
Clutch disc.
And I know, you guys are like razor blades.
Yeah, so it gets really thin, and that's a problem is as you get thinner, well, then it heats up a lot faster. Well, that's heat's number one killer of clutch.
Yeah.
So everything has to get thinner to be able to stack up. So that means the heat flash is crazy. So
how do you start to dissipate heat from a multi-disc clutch?
You have to have a good floater and a steel, something to suck that heat out of that friction material. You have to have that mass, and that's one of the things we've always concentrated on, is under the friction surface itself, is having a decent amount of mass to pull that heat out of that friction material. Otherwise, it's just going to continue to heat and heat up, and then eventually it'll just die.
How do you handle pedal feel and how much pressure it is? Like, how do you start to address that? You and I have talked about, like, there's sort of two questions to it. Like, one is, when you're stacking up discs and getting a high load clutch, how do you handle it that way?
Well, here's a good example. This is what we do internally. You ever hear me say, our clutch has balls?
Yeah.
Well, that's what it does.
We're looking at a chunk of metal.
Well, that's a section of a pressure plate, the pressure ring itself.
Yeah.
So the other side is where the disc would ride right there.
Okay.
So this would be the pressure plate, and this is where the diaphragm pivots right here. So this is the pivot point. On a standard clutch, it's just like a ramp one way and the other way. And one way to achieve clamp load is to change that fixture, that fulcrum point. We want to move it in. Well, when you have a ramp on each way, you can only go so far before you start changing the thickness of this thing. And that is actually the life of the clutch. So what we do is we take that ball, we machine that whole thing off, and we can take a ball and move it in as far as we want, but we can also tailor the height and thickness of this thing.
So we'll get a picture and we'll put this up there, and you'll see the flat section is what a normal clutch would basically
exactly.
be, and then the one with the two ball bearings in it would be what you guys
do. And these are glued in here, but normally they're not, so they actually reduce friction inside of it. So as that diaphragm's pivoting on it, we reduce internal friction.
Right,
so that's
it's
how
almost
we soften.
Like a flat yeah. tappet cam versus
yep,
a roller cam.
Exactly.
You know, this is
a
bearing.
It's a good analogy right there.
Yeah.
And what that does is reduces friction, so we can soften the pedal effort at the same time. We can increase clamp load without affecting pedal effort.
So you and I have had a couple conversations about the BMW that I've been working
yes.
on, and I don't know what clutch is in that. It's
I think it's a Sachs.
Yeah, it's something aftermarket that was done 15 years ago. When Adam Kroll initially built the car, and you know, we've got the car running pretty good. I blew up a supercharger on it, and I put a new one on there, and I figured, why not upgrade it? So now we've got a Vortec V2 Ti.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting tuned for it, but the car is basically undrivable because
the clutch
pedal is so heavy.
It's probably got a heavier diaphragm in it. That's one of the things
I mean, maybe just the technology has changed so much in the last 15 years, but not knowing really what's in it. But
well, one of the things, and going back to this pivot ball, because this is one of the things we did, there was two ways to achieve clamp hold. One was to change that fulcrum point. The other was to change that diaphragm spring. Sachs did that. They put a stiffer spring in there. And so that actually gives you a really heavy pedal. You get more clamp load. But we can go back and say, okay, well, we don't need that heavy spring anymore. Let's put something that's closer to OE so you got a nice soft pedal. But we can give you the same amount of clamp load you have, if not more, by putting that ball bearing technology in there.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, it's genius that you guys are doing this, and I'm not sure who, you know.
Most people think they'll say, oh, we can have our other competitors say, oh, they just paint them orange and that's all they do. It's like, no, there's a lot more.
No. There's a lot more to it,
yeah.
And somebody over at CenterForce is super smart. Is it you? I mean,
I don't know. I look in the mirror and I say, you're pretty smart, dude.
Yeah, you're pretty smart, dude.
So,
but
no, that's a whole team that does that.
The engineering team over there that's working on this stuff, figuring it out. And you're right. It is kind of amazing how we're getting into that now. What about? Are you guys getting into the paddle shift manual type of cars? You know, I like examples would be like maybe like an SMG.
Yeah, those are the twin clutch.
Not the automatic paddle shift. You know what I'm talking about? Like a real twin clutch.
We've looked at them. They're a little complicated, and
I mean, is there a need for it? I mean,
when there's a bigger need, we'll probably get. But we're already looking at it.
Yeah,
but you know, there's a cost that goes into that as well, you know, to develop something like that. And it could be costly to really develop something like that where
Right. I mean, for now, the market is, you know, some of the, you know, maybe BMW, Maserati, yeah. Ferrari.
Well, those BMW guys, you know, they're different.
Are different. I mean, these aren't your core audience,
but
you guys have clutches for pretty much everything. But
I'm being funny there, but but yeah, no. Eventually, we will have something. We'll have to if we want to stay in the game. So, and you might be able to incorporate new technology into like what you have, your BMW as well, and that's what'd be fun. That's what interests me is like, hey, can we take new technology and put it into, you know, an older vehicle like what you have, which is still an awesome vehicle. But if you can get some of those, the newer, the technology would be.
And here we're at SEMA, and there's got to be at some point you're going to start to see maybe transmission manufacturers and some of those guys coming to you and going, hey, you know.
We met with one this week.
You know, here's my Tremec 6-speed, and now all these, you know, crazy hot rod builders, Bodie Strouds of the world going, oh, my client wants a twin disc paddle shift manual transmission.
And that's it.
And he's going to call you and be like, what can we do?
Good old buddy, Bodie.
Good old buddy, Bodie, yeah. Right, because that'll happen, right? Yeah. If it hasn't already, it's going to happen. Someone's going to say, what can we do? What can we develop?
That's when we just see what we can do, you know. But we want to be ready for it. That call's coming.
Yeah.
We just want to be ready for it, and that's why we're already looking at it.
And one of the things that we've seen, especially this year at SEMA, is just how technology has been playing more and more of a role into everything. We were talking to the guys over the automatic transmission, talking to TCI, and now they're like, oh, no, we already have a transmission controller. We have a box that controls electronic automatic transmission. He goes, but now you can control it with your phone. It's all Bluetooth. You can control
everything
it with your phone.
Is gone.
You know, and everybody's suspension is adjustable. That you know, there's some sort of
screen
or something. I mean, you know, it is adjustable.
Yeah, the Hotchkiss came by today. He's like, hey, John did. He's like, hey, check out my new shock. You know, we can control it with your phone. And I'm like, cool. Last thing I want to be doing is driving. But I mean, it's really cool technology. But
it's cool technology, but it's funny because he's on our list. We're going to talk to him, I think, tomorrow. So you guys will probably hear it on Friday. But yeah, somebody's going, hey, you can adjust the suspension from while you're driving.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. And then somebody else says, you can dial in your, you can change the shift points.
Yeah, you're driving.
While you're driving. It's like, sounds like a lot of things to do while you're driving. It's like, how about we just
drive it?
Just drive it, you know? I don't mind, like, the car companies are starting to, I think it was Ford was telling me, Ford had a bunch of different things to adjust in the Mustang GT and this performance pack. And then the Bullet, they're like, well, the Bullet, we wanted to turn it up a notch, but they actually scaled back all of the various things. Instead of like 19 different settings of stuff, they're like, we'll just give you the four, you know, like your track and snow and sport and street and then they'll do the math on the back end and get it dialed in as much as possible.
Let's get into where, you know, the driver, you know, on going to a track-based bill, the driver is just becoming more of an average guy because the car's going to basically make all the changes. All you have to do is steer it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to do all the shifting, all the adjusting for the shocks. You know, hey, if you come in this corner a little hot because you overdrove it, well, the car's going to try to make up for it, you know. And
right. Yeah. Just because you have track mode in your car doesn't mean you should use it.
Yeah. We see that quite often.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Well,
you
guys
can drive it.
You guys do a ton of autocrossing.
We do. Yeah.
You know, maybe it's just, I don't know. Is this something that you guys are just into, or just
get
a lot of clients? I know. All my cars are broken.
Well, we put you in a car.
Yeah.
Put you in a car.
I'm good at hitting cones. Is that part of the thing?
That's exactly what those cones are there for.
Okay.
I mean, they're not there just to look at. I mean, they're there to see how many you can hit
lap. If this is a kill the cone competition, I'm in.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I mean,
there's a special trophy for that and everything.
I'm sure. I'm sure there is a special trophy for it.
It's one way to make the podium.
Yeah. Well, you know, Goldberg very famously put together Wanda's car.
Yes. I actually went out there and stayed with him, helping build that thing.
Yeah. And then she was out of town, and he drove it. And
yeah, he did.
He hit, like, the timing clock, pole or something.
Put a big old dent on
put
the side
dent
of
the door. Kind of caved the
door. He's aggressive.
In. Yeah, he's a little aggressive. Oh, well, we just did Goodwood as well, and then he was driving one of Mike Skinner's NASCAR trucks, and he hit the hay bale.
Did he?
Last year he did good. This year he kind of...
How do you do with the drag race with the Hellcats?
Oh, that was great. So we did CarCast. We did it as a live show at Roadkill Nights in Detroit. And Goldberg actually won the whole thing.
Oh,
he beat
awesome.
The Roadkill guys. He beat Leah Pritchett and Matt Hagen and everybody. I mean, it wasn't all head-to-head, but I think the final run was Goldberg versus Finnegan.
Oh.
And he beat Finnegan?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Finnegan's
and those guys
some,
do a lot of drag racing.
I would say Finnegan's, he's got some
I tell you, I think the difference is you take guys with a lot of experience like Finnegan and Freiberger, and then you put them in a street car without slicks and on a non-sticky street course. And
probably burned it down
and
all the way down.
It's a different game, you know? It's kind of a game changer.
Goldberg can drive.
Yeah.
Well,
he's got a heavy foot. So every time he he's taking his kid out to a baseball game or something in one of his cars.
You seen the size
of him? Yeah. His foot is physically heavy. I meant it's an actual heavy foot.
Yeah.
Like Frankenstein feet. And so in his street car, he does a lot of pedaling, the street car, to get that thing to go. And
have you rode with him in his Cobra?
I have rode with him in his Cobra.
That was fun. After we did the clutch and that, we went for a ride, and it's like 920 horse, and oh my god, that thing's fast. And he actually drove pretty well with that thing. We got across up several times.
We went for a ride in that thing. He was hauling ass. We found some place, we did some donuts, the cops came, shut us down. It was a lovely day.
Great day with Goldberg.
Great day, and a typical day. A typical day with Goldberg. Will, thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. I'm gonna go run outside and take a ride in one of the drifting cars.
Oh, who are you going with?
Jack Roush Jr.
Oh, sweet.
He said, "Come on back, and we're gonna go."
Must be nice to be you.
Yeah.
We kind of get stuck in the booth all day and skip lunches and get to go hang out at night.
We'll bring you some candy.
I appreciate that. Maybe some type of Snickers.
Guys, check out centerforce.com, and they make a clutch for pretty much everything. And if you ever get confused, give these guys a call or send them an email.
Please.
And say, this is what I'm doing. Like, you may think your 900 horsepower, LS whatever needs a new clutch, but you should find out what clutch you need. Because like you said, everything from gear ratios and tire sizes all play a role in this now. But thank you so much. Good luck with your Jeep.
Thank you.
And I hope you get it fixed up.
You're going to go for a ride in it one of these days.
We're going to have to plan something for sure.
All right.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you.
Okay, guys, that wraps up SEMA Day 1. Definitely check in with us again on Friday for more coverage for Day 2. We had a great time. We got to catch up with friends like Bodie Stroud from BSI, his new chassis. We're going to talk about those on our other show, Shift and Steer. We went drifting with Jack Roush Jr. We've got a whole bunch of photos we're putting together as well. Definitely check out CarCast Show for that or our social media. Go to facebook.com/CarCastShow. And we will see you on Friday.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.